You're listening to Stateside. I'm Lester Graham, and for Cynthia Canty. The U.S. Geological Survey reports since the turn of the last century, water levels of Lake Michigan have increased in a series of ever higher peaks. In 1964, an expensive house in St. Joseph was taken by the lake. There was damage up and down Michigan's coast that year. Another high lake water moment spanned from 1985 to 1987. And again, there was a lot of damage to homes, beachfront property, and industry. Researchers have been working with local communities to help determine the best ways to plan for those different lake levels, because they're coming. You can imagine the temptation of someone to build right next to a beach or on a bluff overlooking the lake during one of those low-level periods, just to see that house fall off of an eroding bluff or wake up and find lake water at your knees in your beach house. Joining me now is Dick Norton with the University of Michigan's Taubman College of Architecture and Urban Planning. You're working with other researchers and experts to understand the fluctuating lake levels and their impacts on the coast. Who all's involved?
I've been collaborating the longest with a colleague, Guy Meadows, who's up at Michigan Tech University. He was at U of M for quite a while, but he's now the director of the Great Lakes Research Lab up there. He really understands how lake levels affect shoreline dynamics and especially how the shape of the shorelines change over time as lake levels change over time. And it turns out that's quite different from the way ocean coast shorelines change. And it's kind of in a sneaky way. When the lake levels are low for a period of time, the lakes tend to push a lot of sand up onto the beach. And so you get this kind of double whammy false impression that the lakes have gone down. We've got lots of beach we can build. The problem is when the lake levels come back up, they can quickly chew away at that sand that's there and start cutting back into the shoreline. So Guy had that figured out a long time ago. I'm a planner and a lawyer by training, and so I'm very interested in the way that local governments take that information or not, as the case may be, and fold it into their local planning efforts. So we've been trying to figure out, along with the Land Information Access Association, it's a nonprofit planning firm located up in Traverse City. Our three groups have been collaborating with local communities to figure out how can we come up with methods that local governments can use that don't require really expensive engineering studies to better fold an understanding of the risks that their shoreline properties are at into their local planning efforts.
Now, longtime residents of the lakeshore understand that we have these fluctuations. I can imagine that there are city managers who haven't been around that long, or developers for that matter, who've not been around long enough to understand what they see today might be a lot different in 10 years or 15 years. Are cities along the coast making some bad zoning or development decisions right now?
We've done some work and collected community plans and evaluated this systematically, and it's pretty remarkable how few of them really are paying attention to their coastline. And in fact, I like to quip that you wouldn't know a lot of these communities are coastal communities except they have a picture of a lighthouse on the front cover. And there are a lot of reasons for that. I think they're relying on the state. They think the state's going to protect them. And the lakes have been so low for so long, up until just the last few years, there just wasn't a whole lot of oomph to worry about them. You're right that local residents are more aware of the way the lakes work, but that's not always good insurance. In fact, there was a house built in St. Joe, really close to the water. When I first saw it, I thought, wow, they have to be a new resident. Turns out they've been lifelong residents. They just had thought, well, the lakes have gone down, we can build. So they built really close to the water, and they've since had to pick that house and move it back.
Wow.
Because of the lakes when they came back up.
You know, when I covered the environment regularly, I remember a lot of encouragement for cities to consider what's called softscape rather than hardscape along Great Lakes shorelines. Can you tell us what that means and why it makes a difference?
So hardscape, another term for that is armoring. So the idea is put out groins or breakwalls or hardened structures that
are designed. Seawalls made of concrete metal.
Seawalls, exactly. Yeah. Yep. Those work really well at protecting the house that's on the beach. They're really bad for the beach itself. The tendency, the pressure is once you've built a house and you see the lake now chewing away at your beach is to want to build a hardened structure to protect it. The problem is with the way the lakes work, that means the beach will eventually disappear. The lake will just scour away the sand. And especially when lakes come back up, you can see long stretches of beach where there's no beach left. It's all just armored structure. Softscape or green infrastructure or those approaches are attempts to use vegetation, a mix of rock and such that are designed to be more natural protective buffers to try and let the shoreline move as naturally as it can. And the key thing to know about the beach is it's a dynamic system. It's not going to stay in one place. It moves as the lakes change. So we're really trying to figure out how to get property owners to think about engaging softscape structures instead of hardened structures.
So you're working with these communities, and I can imagine some of them don't want to have restrictions because it might discourage developers or they'd be forced to deliver some bad news to some of the landowners in the area. So what are the consequences in that situation?
So, yeah, private property rights are alive and well in coastal Michigan communities, and there are a lot of good reasons to worry. You know, folks have spent a lot of money and invested a lot in their properties and want to enjoy them. The problem is if you don't try and regulate that somehow or encourage them to move back and stay out of harm's way, they really become at risk of being damaged, if not destroyed, when the right storm comes along. There's a lot of uncertainty here because we don't know when the lakes are going to – what level they're going to be at any given time.
Right. It's not regular.
It's not regular. And then factor on top of that increasing storminess that's coming on with climate change. Well, if you get the right storm with a high water level, you could see tremendous damage. At the other hand, if you get the right storm when the lakes are low, maybe the damage won't be so bad. So there's a lot of why do we need to worry about this? It's imposing on people. That, by the way, is the major stretch of their tax revenue because that's where really all the wealthy homes are tend to be, is right on the shoreline. So there's a lot of incentive for communities to kind of not pay attention to their shoreline. And they're really kind of shooting craps. If they do that, and they may luck out for decades with no bad storm, but one good storm could come and do a whole lot of damage and undermine all of that.
You mentioned climate change. It's one of the questions I wanted to ask you about. We see different models showing different impacts on the Great Lakes. How do you deal with climate change and the uncertainty when you make your recommendations?
So we've been working on a method called scenario-based planning, which is to kind of envision different what we call climate futures, a lucky future, an expected future, and a perfect storm future. And it's combinations of where lake levels might be at any given time with increasing storminess. There is a lot of uncertainty here, and I know climate change is a controversial concept. It turns out if you get away from that term and all of the baggage that it brings and just talk about the variability of the lakes over time, local residents know that. They've experienced the lakes coming up and down, and they're seeing increased storminess. So they recognize they need to deal with the uncertainty and the conditions they're confronting. And then the trick is how to just trade off. How much do we need to invest in setbacks, new green infrastructure, stormwater management systems, so that we can kind of be better prepared and more resilient, if you will, from these future storms? And what's the most logical way to do that, given the likelihood that those storms will hit, recognizing there's still a whole lot of uncertainty about what might hit and when it would happen?
One of the other things I wanted to ask you about is if you put development in the wrong place, it can have an impact on the environment. And, you know, the shores tend to be a really important place for fish hatcheries and things like that. How do you explain that part to people that, you know, if you put your house or your wall here, all of this behind it is going to be impacted because it's not getting the kind of environment it needs to thrive?
A picture's worth a thousand words. We do have photographic evidence of homes that have been lost to the lake. That can strike one's imagination. The house that was built in St. Joseph that I mentioned has become kind of the poster child of if you're not careful with where you build, you can end up with having houses that are way too far out. And what happened with that house was the lakes came back up, and we have good aerial imagery of that house at greater risk as the lake was getting closer and closer. That's a good way to do it. The state and NOAA has developed coastal viewers that allow you to try and guesstimate where the shoreline will be as water levels change. A lot of imagery to show wetlands and how they exist, where they are, how they are situated in terms of hazard zones. Those kinds of maps are useful tools to get folks to think about what they're confronting.
Final question. You mentioned St. Joe's and that house. I was reading and doing my research and found an article in the Chicago Tribune talking about a St. Joe house that basically fell off of a bluff because of erosion of the bluff in 1964. And that was a lower lake level period. So this is not just a danger during the high levels, right?
It's absolutely not a danger during just the high levels because the lakes, Guy Meadows tells me that the lakes are geologically young features. They're basically sandy pits that are slowly eroding over time. So even when the lakes are low or at average levels, you still have some erosion that can take place. In high bluff stretches in particular, you don't see kind of a slow gradual erosion of those bluffs. You tend to see catastrophic failures of chunks of bluff at a time. So if you get the right storm, even on an average water level time period, you can still see a pretty substantial failure of a bluff. Again, the problem is who knows when that's going to happen. There's a whole lot of uncertainty. There's reason to worry that it may become more common as we're starting to see more storminess, and especially as the lakes start to climb again.
We're going to talk to the community development manager for Grand Haven after we finish here. You've worked with Grand Haven. That's one city. What kind of special challenges did you find there?
We worked both with the city and the township of Grand Haven, and they did a collaborative planning effort together, and then we worked with each of them to go a little bit further and make suggestions on how they might modify their zoning codes. And the problems that they present are the same that we see elsewhere, which is a lack of salience. We just haven't had problems like this in the past that we can remember, so why worry about it now?
Yeah, because it's been 30 years.
It's been 30 years, yeah. There's a lot of development that's now created pressure to not want to pay attention to this too much. While the stretch of the coast is really important to these communities, that's just a thin slice of the larger community. So they're pretty overwhelmed with all of the other stuff that communities are having to deal with nowadays. So there's just a whole lot of inertia to not really pay attention to this. It really takes proactive community leaders, like the community development leader that you'll talk to, was really interested in working with us to try and pay attention to these issues. And the timing was right because the community was at a place where it needed to update its master plan anyway. So it made a lot of sense to try and do a better job of folding these coastal issues into their ongoing plan update efforts.
Well, we'll talk with them in a second, but I want to thank you for coming in. Dick Norton is Urban and Regional Planning Professor with the University of Michigan's Taubman College of Architecture and Urban Planning. Appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
Now let's turn to Jennifer Howland, who is the Community Development Manager for Grand Haven. You've been updating your master plan. What kind of help were these guys? And the material that they put together?
Oh, it was immensely helpful. We were in need of an update to our master plan, and when they reached out to us to consider looking at our community through the lens of resiliency, we were really intrigued. Being a community right on the lakeshore, we are impacted by water level changes and different weather events that impact the properties immediately adjacent to our waterways. So we thought that it was a really unique way to look at master planning.
Now, the lakes haven't been high for a while, in fact, almost 30 years when they hit their high water mark. Has Grand Haven been guilty of allowing builders to get too close to the lake?
No, the city's been pretty proactive with making sure that we recognize that the water levels do fluctuate over time. It has been quite some time since they have been high, and sometimes memories are short, but along the water line, we do have average setback requirements in certain areas that protect view sheds as well as keeping people from getting too close to the water.
How did the discussions in Grand Haven go among the politicians and among the staff at City Hall and at the township? How'd they go regarding repercussions of limits on development along Lake Michigan?
Well, everyone was really interested in understanding how far the regulations might go. I think everyone was pretty much on board with the idea that it's important to have development appropriately located and built in a way that's not going to be damaged by high water. We recognize that. But the idea of having too many regulations was also a sensitive topic. But through the planning part of it, we were able to think broadly, and generally the community accepted the ideas of being mindful of how development impacts the natural water fluctuations, as well as how we can protect our investments in our property development.
Give me an example of a specific change that Grand Haven will make because of this research.
Well, we're considering some changes. We didn't commit to any legislative changes at this time. The master plan has been adopted, so we do have a policy guide that has specific chapters about how to have proper development placement and consideration for natural features of the environment. But in terms of changing our laws, that's in the future. We're looking at potentially modifying some setback requirements in one of the lakeshore neighborhoods to make sure that it's not just an average setback, but perhaps considering a larger minimum waterfront setback. So there would be no chance for them to get too close and cause their property to be in jeopardy.
Seems to make sense, but of course, if you've got that beach house, you want to get it as close to the lake as possible, I guess.
Yes, that's true.
Are the neighbors going to understand what you're trying to do?
Well, we already have regulations that protect their views, so nobody can go further out towards the lake than their neighbors on the either side. But over time, you could imagine as properties redevelop, that average can scoot closer and closer to the lake. So we're thinking at some point it may be practical to have a hard line where in no instance can you go closer than that certain distance.
A little housing building creep that there sounds like. That's Jennifer Hallin. She's the community developer manager for Grand Haven. They just redid their master plan with the help of some researchers to make sure that when the lake rises again, their buildings and property won't be in danger. Thanks very much for talking with us.
Thank you very much.